July 6th. We have begun our journey through the books of 1st and 2nd Chronicles. The record in these books parallels that in Samuel and Kings. The focus here is on David and the kingdom of Judah, and the viewpoint is that of the priests. The opening genealogy takes you from Adam to Saul, and that is quite a journey. And that's followed by an account of David's reign. 2 Chronicles, as we get into that later on, opens with the reign of Solomon, and then describes the kings of Judah, from the division of the kingdom to the captivity. This is going to give us some deep insight into the people of God in the olden days. These books were important to the Jews, who returned to the land after captivity. The genealogy established their tribal connections, something especially significant to the priests. The people needed David's example of godliness, and the emphasis on the temple was needed at a time when it had to be rebuilt. Well, the books of 1st and 2nd Chronicles encourage people seeking to rebuild in a time of change and difficulty. And if you're going through such a process, then the narration of these books will be an encouragement to you. So as we listen to 1st and 2nd Chronicles, you'll want to note the cross-reference to Samuel and Kings and compare some of these complementary passages. Well, let's continue now in our journey through the book of 1 Chronicles and continue our reading in the Old Testament. July 6th, 1 Chronicles chapter 2, verse 18, through chapter 4, verse 4. Hezron's son Caleb had two wives, named Azubah and Jerioth. Azubah's sons were named Jeshur, Shobab, and Ardon. After Azubah died, Caleb married Ephrathah, and they had a son named Hur. Hur was the father of Uri. Uri was the father of Bezalel. When Hezron was 60 years old, he married Gilead's sister, the daughter of Machir. They had a son named Segub. Segub was the father of Jair, who ruled 23 towns in the land of Gilead. Later, Geshur and Aram captured the towns of Jair and also took Kenath and its 60 surrounding villages. All these were descendants of Machir, the father of Gilead. Soon after Hezron died, in the town of Caleb Ephrathah, his wife Abijah gave birth to a son named Asher, the father of Tekoa. The sons of Jerahmeel, the oldest son of Hezron, were Ram, the oldest, Bunah, Oren, Ozem, and Ahijah. Jerahmeel had a second wife named Atarah. She was the mother of Onam. The sons of Ram, the oldest son of Jerahmeel, were Maaz, Jamin, and Eker. The sons of Onam were Shammai and Jada. The sons of Shammai were Nadab and Abishur. The sons of Abishur and his wife Abihail were Aban and Molid. The sons of Nadab were Seled and Apaim. Seled died without children, but Apaim had a son named Ishai. The son of Ishai was Shishan. Shishan had a descendant named Alai. Shammai's brother, Jada, had two sons named Jether and Jonathan. Jether died without children, but Jonathan had two sons named Peleth and Zaza. These were all the descendants of Jerahmeel. Shishan had no sons, though he did have daughters. He also had an Egyptian servant named Jarha. Shishan gave one of his daughters to be the wife of Jarha, and they had a son named Attai. Attai was the father of Nathan. Nathan was the father of Zabad. Zabad was the father of Ephlael. Ephlael was the father of Obed. Obed was the father of Jehu. Jehu was the father of Azariah. Azariah was the father of Helez. Helez was the father of Eleasah. Eleasah was the father of Sismai. Sismai was the father of Shallum. Shallum was the father of Jechemiah. Jechemiah was the father of Elishama. The oldest son of Caleb, the brother of Jerahmeel, was Misha, the father of Ziph. Caleb's second son was Marisha, the father of Hebron. The sons of Hebron were Korah, Tapua, Rechem, and Shema. Shema was the father of Raham. Raham was the father of Jorkeam. Rechem was the father of Shammai. the son of Shammai was Maon. Maon was the father of Bethzur. Caleb's concubine, Ephah, gave birth to Haran, Mozah, and Gaziz. Haran was the father of Gaziz. The sons of Jedai were Rigam, Jotham, Gishan, Pelet, Ephah, and Shaph. Another of Caleb's concubines, Maakah, gave birth to Sheber and Tirhana. She also gave birth to Shaph, the father of Madmanah, and Sheva, the father of Machbinah and Gibeah. Caleb also had a daughter named Aksah. These were all descendants of Caleb. The sons of Hur, the oldest son of Caleb's wife, Ephrathah, were Shobal, the father of Kiriath-Jearim, Salma, the father of Bethlehem, and Harif, the father of Beth-Gader. The descendants of Shobal, the father of Kiriath-Jearim, were Haroah, half the Manahathites, and the families of Kiriath-Jearim, the Ithrites, Puthites, Shumathites, and Mizrahites, from whom came the people of Zorah and Eshtaol. The descendants of Salma were Bethlehem, the Netophathites, Etroth-Beth-Joab, the other half of the Manahathites, the Zorites, and the families of scribes living at Jabez, the Tirathites, Shimeathites, and Sukathites. All these were Kenites who descended from Hamath, the father of the family of Rechab. These were the sons who were born to David in Hebron. The oldest was Amnon, whose mother was Ahinoam of Jezreel. The second was Kileab, whose mother was Abigail from Carmel. The third was Absalom, whose mother was Maakah, the daughter of Talmai, king of Geshur. The fourth was Adonijah, whose mother was Haggith. The fifth was Shephathiah, whose mother was Abital. The sixth was Ithream, whose mother was Iglah. These six sons were born to David in Hebron, where he reigned 7.5 years. Then David moved the capital to Jerusalem, where he reigned another 33 years. The sons born to David in Jerusalem included Shimeah, Shobab, Nathan, and Solomon. Bathsheba, the daughter of Amiel, was the mother of these sons. David also had 9 other sons, Ibhar, Elishua, Elpelet, Nogah, Nepheg, Japhia, Elishama, Elah, Eliada, and Eliphelet. These were the sons of David, not including the sons of his concubines. David also had a daughter named Tamar. The descendants of Solomon were Rehoboam, Abijah, Azza, Jehoshaphat, Jehoram, Ahaziah, Joash, Amaziah, Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, Hezekiah, Manasseh, Amon, and Josiah. The sons of Josiah were Johanan, the oldest, Jehoiakim, the second, Zedekiah, the third, and Jehoaz, the fourth. Jehoiakim was succeeded by his son Jehoiachin. He, in turn, was succeeded by his uncle Zedekiah. The sons of Jehoiachin, who was taken prisoner by the Babylonians, were Shealtiel, Melchiram, Pedaiah, Shenazar, Jechemiah, Hoshamah, and Nerabiah. The sons of Pedaiah were Zerubbabel and Shimei. The sons of Zerubbabel were Meshulam and Hananiah. He also had a daughter named Shelomith. His 5 other sons were Hashubah, Ohel, Berechiah, Hazadiah, and Jushab-Hesed. The sons of Hananiah were Pelatiah and Jeshiah. Jeshiah's son was Riphahiah. Riphahiah's son was Arnan. Arnan's son was Obadiah. Obadiah's son was Shechaniah. Shechaniah's descendants were Shemaiah and his sons Hattush, Igal, Beriah, Neariah, and Shaphat, 6 in all. The sons of Neariah were Elionai, Hizkiah, and Azrakam, 3 in all. The sons of Elionai were Hodaviah, Eliashib, Peliah, Akub, Johanan, Deliah, and Anani, 7 in all. Some of the descendants of Judah were Perez, Hezron, Carmi, Hur, and Shobal. Shobal's son, Rehaiah, was the father of Jahath. Jahath was the father of Ahumai and Lehad. These were the families of the Zorathites. The descendants of Etam were Jezreel, Ishma, Idbash, Hazelaponai, his daughter, Penuel, the father of Gedor, and Ezer, the father of Husha. These were the descendants of Hur, the firstborn of Ephrathah, the ancestor of Bethlehem. July 6th. As we look into the New Testament, today we'll be reading from the book of Acts, chapter 24, verses 1 through 27. How do the unsaved go about opposing the Lord's servants and their work? Tertullus, the lawyer, started with flattery, knowing that many people in high places are susceptible to it. Flattery appeals to our pride. If we did not flatter ourselves, others could not successfully flatter us. See, we really want to believe what they say. Then Tertullus used slander. Napoleon said, "He who knows how to flatter also knows how to slander." As his last weapon, the lawyer called on false witnesses, who together supported Tertullus's lies about Paul. And yes, they indeed were all lies. Paul's defense was threefold: his life, his faith, and his service to his nation. Although his enemies could not prove their accusations, Paul did not go free. The safest place for Paul was in that prison, for God had work for him to do in Rome. The principle for you and me is this: you may not understand why God permits lies to triumph, but leave it all in his hands. He's in control, and the final judgment rests with him. And with that, let's begin our reading today in the New Testament. July 6th, Acts chapter 24, verses 1 through 27. 5 days later, Ananias, the high priest, arrived with some of the Jewish leaders and the lawyer Tertullus to press charges against Paul. When Paul was called in, Tertullus laid charges against Paul in the following address to the governor. "Your Excellency, you have given peace to us Jews and have enacted reforms for us. And for all of this, we are very grateful to you. But lest I bore you, kindly give me your attention for only a moment as I briefly outline our case against this man. For we have found him to be a troublemaker, a man who is constantly inciting the Jews throughout the world to riots and rebellions against the Roman government. He is a ringleader of the sect known as the Nazarenes. Moreover, he was trying to defile the temple when we arrested him. You can find out the truth of our accusations by examining him yourself." Then the other Jews chimed in, declaring that everything Tertullus said was true. Now it was Paul's turn. The governor motioned for him to rise and speak. Paul said, "I know, sir, that you have been a judge of Jewish affairs for many years, and this gives me confidence as I make my defense. You can quickly discover that it was no more than 12 days ago that I arrived in Jerusalem to worship at the temple. I didn't argue with anyone in the temple, nor did I incite a riot in any synagogue or on the streets of the city. These men certainly cannot prove the things they accuse me of doing. But I admit that I follow the way, which they call a sect. I worship the God of our ancestors, and I firmly believe the Jewish law and everything written in the books of prophecy. I have hope in God, just as these men do, that he will raise both the righteous and the ungodly. Because of this, I always try to maintain a clear conscience before God and everyone else. After several years away, I returned to Jerusalem with money to aid my people and to offer sacrifices to God. My accusers saw me in the temple as I was completing a purification ritual. There was no crowd around me and no rioting. but some Jews from the province of Asia were there, and they ought to be here to bring charges if they have anything against me. Ask these men here what wrongdoing the Jewish High Council found in me, except for one thing I said when I shouted out, I'm on trial before you today because I believe in the resurrection of the dead. Felix, who was quite familiar with the way, adjourned the hearing and said, Wait until Esaias, the garrison commander, arrives. Then I will decide the case. He ordered an officer to keep Paul in custody, but to give him some freedom and allow his friends to visit him and take care of his needs. A few days later, Felix came with his wife Drusilla, who was Jewish. Sending for Paul, they listened as he told them about faith in Christ Jesus. As he reasoned with them about righteousness and self-control and the judgment to come, Felix was terrified. Go away for now, he replied. When it is more convenient, I'll call for you again. He also hoped that Paul would bribe him. So he sent for him quite often and talked with him. 2 years went by in this way. Then Felix was succeeded by Porcius Festus. And because Felix wanted to gain favor with the Jewish leaders, he left Paul in prison. Today we're reading Psalm 4, verses 1 through 8. David wrote this psalm as he was about to retire for the night. He could not do much about the war around him, but he could do something about the war within him. He did not want to lie in bed and worry. So he committed himself and his situation to the Lord. He did that by asking. Asking the Lord for help is still a very good way to deal with inner turmoil. And he believed. He faced his anger honestly and gave it to the Lord. Instead of lying in bed and thinking about your problems, meditate on the Lord and offer him sacrifices of praise, even in the midst of difficulty, which is actually the very best time. And he received. In the darkness, he saw the face of God and received light. In his sorrow, he discovered the gift of gladness. In the time of battle, he received peace. God did not immediately change the situation, but he did change David. And he can do the same for you. Psalm chapter 4, verses 1 through 8, for the choir director, a psalm of David, to be accompanied by stringed instruments. Answer me when I call, O God who declares me innocent. Take away my distress. Have mercy on me and hear my prayer. How long will you people ruin my reputation? How long will you make these groundless accusations? How long will you pursue lies? You can be sure of this. The Lord has set apart the godly for himself. The Lord will answer when I call to him. Don't sin by letting anger gain control over you. Think about it overnight and remain silent. Offer proper sacrifices and trust in the Lord. Many people say, Who will show us better times? Let the smile of your face shine on us, Lord. You have given me greater joy than those who have abundant harvests of grain and wine. I will lie down in peace and sleep, for you alone, O Lord, will keep me safe. Proverbs 18, verses 16 through 18. Giving a gift works wonders. It may bring you before important people. Any story sounds true until someone sets the record straight. Casting lots can end arguments and settle disputes between powerful opponents.